At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. This week's episode is a very different one. It's an episode that I hope that we weren't going to have to make. In order to understand what's going on here, I'm going to take you back to last fall. This past fall, if you guys remember, I talked about for a couple of weeks how I was going out of town. I was going to Texas, and I was going to be filming an interview for a project about Ed's case, and I was excited about it. Everybody was excited about it. When I came back, I didn't give you any details, but when I came back, I told you that there were some unethical things happening. We pulled out of the project. Myself, Allison, and Ed pulled out of the project and thought that at that point, it was dead. It just wasn't going to happen. And because of that, I didn't get into any of the details with you guys. Well, we just found out Ed came across it on Saturday. The project, somehow, we don't know how, is going forward. Going to be aired on the A&E network, who was the network responsible that was funding the project, sometime pretty soon here. And I'm shocked. I don't know what that's going to look like, what they're going to be doing. Very disappointed that that's happening. So the good news and bad news is, the good news is we get to hear from Allison 2 weeks in a row, Allison Clayton from the Innocence Project of Texas, and we get to hear from Ed. Ed's with me today. The bad news is that we're here because I thought before this thing comes out, I think that it's necessary to share with all of you exactly how this whole project, how this whole series was created and what you can expect from it. Now, we can only speak to Ed's case. The series is covering, I believe, 6 or 7 different cases in each episode. I've thought about, but I'm not going to stick my nose where it doesn't belong, even reaching out to some of the other attorneys and other people they covered, because I suspect that what they did with Ed is probably the same thing they did with everyone. So let me give you kind of the, first of all, let me just welcome Ed. Allison, thanks guys for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me just kind of give you the nuts and bolts of what the production was, and then we'll walk through from all three of our perspectives what happened and how this thing was created. And you'll see why I think that they probably pulled this with everyone else. So this started back in that summer, early fall, late summer. Ed told me that there's this production company. They're working with A&E, and they want to do this docuseries, and they want to do something on his case. And he talked to them. They seemed legit, and you know, he wanted to do the project. So I agreed to let him give my contact information to Holly, one of the, I don't know what her role as a production assistant or probably a production manager of some kind, whoever Holly was. Holly calls me and talks to me about the project. And she tells me that the concept of this show is they want to take people who have been exonerated or freed and give them the chance to prove their innocence to the world by telling their story and having them take a polygraph test, to which I immediately told them there is no chance in hell that Allison or any attorney is going to let their client, when they're still either litigating or things are still up in the air or just in general, do a TV polygraph. It's just not going to happen. I just told him, I said, I don't think your project's not going to work. You're not going to get people to do it. You're certainly, I know Allison, she's not going to go for it. And she, I later found out, lied directly to me and said, we've already talked about it with Allison. She's fully on board with it. In fact, she's going to come and interview for the show too. So at that point, I was like, well, and I was still very skeptical at that point. I was like, that, well, I mean, I'll come do an interview to give background on the case, but that's shocking to me. I just kept saying that's shocking to me that Allison would do that. And you guys remember this year in the early falls when I first started teaching full time and stuff, plus I was doing the podcast. So there was, I never called Allison to talk to her about it. We hadn't been working on any cases actively for a while. I just figured I would see her in Texas when we go handle this thing. They arranged the filming of this in a way to keep us all very separate. They booked me in a hotel room that was an hour away from Ed. Allison, you didn't even stay in town, or they flew you in that morning and flew you right back out.
That's right. I had to wake up at like 3 or 4 o'clock that morning to fly out and get there in the morning. And then I was to fly back pretty much immediately afterwards.
Yeah. Now, what they didn't count on was when I landed, you know, told Ed I was coming into town. And what they didn't count on was the fact that Ed said, well, I'm going to drive up there and get you. So Ed drove the hour and went and picked me up as soon as I got to the hotel, drove me back to his house so we could, so I could hang out with him and Kim and Kyra, meet the baby, little baby Bob, which I still think should be his name. And Ed had smoked up a bunch of ribs and chicken and stuff. So we just hung out for a few hours. But that was when Ed told me was it that day, Ed, or the day before? When did you do the polygraph? And it was that day, wasn't it?
It was that day.
Yeah. So Ed's telling me that he did the polygraph that day. And then he started to explain to me, and I'm going to let him explain it to you in a minute, but he explains to me how this polygraph went down. And I was immediately like, oh my God. Now, keep in mind, I've produced a docuseries before. I know how this works. I know the visuals you're trying to set up. And I had told Ed that night, I said, my biggest concern here is this show is not going to be 7 people who have been exonerated taking a polygraph and passing it. No one would watch that show. They have to create some drama. So that was my fear going into it. Well, then Ed tells me how they took him in this room. The conditions were horrific. Definitely, like, no way any polygraph should ever be conducted like this. So Ed drives me back to the hotel, and then I really start to kind of sweat things. It's late at night now, but I started realizing, I looked at my call sheet when I had to get to the studio, and it was late in the day. I don't remember what it was. It was like 3 o'clock or something like that. And Allison, we had texted a couple times. Allison said she was interviewing earlier in the day, and this is one of those things that, from the production standpoint, for me, I just know you generally, you try to stack these interviews right on top of each other because you're paying a crew of 12 people to run this and sometimes to rent the space, everything. You don't put big, huge gaps between your interviews. So I thought that was a little weird. I wasn't supposed to be there until like 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock or something. I just kind of smelled a rat. So I got up in the morning, got dressed, got in an Uber. They were going to send me a car. I just got an Uber and just went to the set, hoping that I could find it, that I could catch Allison. I got there. She was back doing her interview. I sat around for a while. And then we had a brief interaction when she was leaving, which was the moment that I found out that they had lied to me and Ed and had never told Allison that there was a polygraph. Because when I finally ran into Allison, I asked her, I was like, why did you do this? Why did you let him do a polygraph? I'm shocked. And I can only... incredulity. I don't know how to describe the look on your face when I said that, Allison, but she was just flabbergasted.
Just shocked, aghast. Just, what do you mean? What polygraph? What do you mean? What polygraph, Bob? What are we talking about?
And this was super weird too, because as we're trying to have this conversation, your flight wasn't for what, like 3 more hours?
Yeah, 3 or 4 more hours.
The producer was telling the production assistant to get her out of there. They were like interrupting us. They were standing between us. They kept coming up. They were trying to rush her out the door to get her out to the airport while we were trying to talk. And that was weird. So then I sit down and I do my interview. And actually, let me back up. this is the part that any plausible deniability on their part goes right out the window. Because I turned, there was a guy, I don't know if he was a PA or if he was a story producer or what his role was, but he was one of our main contacts, a guy named Michael Armstrong. I turned right to him and I said, why didn't you guys tell Allison? Why would you not tell the attorney that you're doing this? And he got very nervous, looked away from me and said, that decision was above my pay grade. So like any claim that they just forgot or they thought they did, he clearly said that there was the people above him made the decision not to tell Ed's attorney that they were going to do a polygraph and then lied to me about it, lied to Ed about it. And then, Allison, I think this is a good time for you. Can you talk a little bit about the process when you came in and how many opportunities they had to tell you about the polygraph and how they kind of averted the issue?
Yeah, of course. So I started talking with these people in probably about September, mid-September of last year. And it was always presented to me as kind of like an expose on Ed's case. And I spoke with the producers. I spoke with Holly. I spoke with Michael. I spoke with like the whole team that I knew of. And multiple times for several hours, just laying out all of the objective evidence in Ed's case, all of the red flags to me, the things that you would typically think are just normal whenever you're talking about somebody's case. And I mean, just hours and hours with these people. And they never once mentioned anything about a polygraph. And in fact, more than once, they said, we need someone who is going to be like opposed to Ed, someone who thinks that he's guilty. And I said, you're not going to find them. No right. one legitimately thinks that Ed is guilty. And I told them, I don't know how that's going to work for your show. I don't know if that's going to be a good option, if this case is a good option for your show, because you don't have that conflict. You don't have that drama. No one thinks that Ed is guilty. So I don't know what you're going to do, if you're going to be able to work with her or not, but there's no one around. And I should have known, you know, if you don't have conflict built in, you create it. But they never mentioned anything about a polygraph, because obviously I would have shut it down immediately. That's not legitimate.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to put my client through that.
After your interview, you met the former FBI agent and they deceptively introduced who he was and what his role was.
Yeah. So I sat down. In addition to the hours of discussions before the interview happened, the interview itself was with two different people for a total of probably like 3.5 hours. It was exhausting, but it was for several hours during the interview. And during the course of the interview, of course, they never once mentioned a polygraph.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the interview, there's this shifty little fella who comes in from nowhere, and they introduce him to me as like a retired FBI agent who was, quote, helping with the investigation. And I remember I was being so nice to him. Now I wish I would have been mean to him, but I was so nice to him. And I was like, oh, you know, I always love to have another pair of experienced eyes on the case. I love working with experienced detectives and investigators. If you have any insights whatsoever, I would love to work with you. And he's like, okay. And then he just kind of scurries off like the little rat that he was. And that was it. That was it.
Yeah, so every opportunity to let Allison, and this thing, there was a series of flukes that allowed us to figure out what was happening. One was the fact that Ed came and picked me up and told me how terrible the polygraph was. Two was me going early and letting Allison know in the couple of minutes that we had with each other. And then three, we were both flying out of the same airport, but Allison's flight got delayed. So I get to the airport and she's still there. So we went and sat down so we could actually talk, because we had a couple hours to sit there. And then I start telling her everything that Ed told me about the polygraph and this and that. And I told her that, you know, I think Ed was coming today, because they also scheduled Ed hours after me instead of having them backed up to each other to come and do his interview where he was getting the results of the polygraph. And I remember Allison asked me, like, well, when is that happening? Well, I think it's happening right now. And then it was, all hands on deck immediately. Allison and me are texting and calling Ed and Kim and both of them. And I think ultimately you got a hold, I don't remember if it was me or you, got a hold of Kim and said, walk into that room, get Ed, and walk out right now. Stop it.
Yeah, that's right. That was me. I was finally, as my flight is taking off, finally able to hear back from Kim, who obviously, you know, had said that the whole thing was completely going off the rails. And I said, get in there, go in there, pick Ed up, tell him you are leaving. Go leave. You don't have to stay there.
Yeah. So, and part of my fear about it was that the right move to get him the hell out of there. Part of my fear is, I think what you're going to probably see in this, the way they're going to cut this together, is that there were like results they didn't like. Cause ultimately here's the spoiler. Ed passed the polygraph that he didn't kill Elnora, but they said he failed the polygraph, that he knows who did it, which I was already suspecting they were going that route. Because, and we didn't know that at the time. We didn't find that out till later after Ed was gone. We didn't pull him out because of that. We pulled him out because of the situation. But when I was doing my interview, they kept asking me all these questions about Ed's mom, about Margie. You guys remember Margie Jackson in season two. And they were misrepresenting information about Margie. And I just kept asking, I don't know. They shouldn't use my interview because I refused to sign the release. So they shouldn't. They have no legal right to use that interview. But if they do anyway, because it seems like they don't give a shit, they, at one point they said, well, don't you, they're in interviewing me, don't you think it's suspicious that once Marge found out that Ed was coming home a couple of weeks or a couple of months before he got released, she killed herself? And I just, in my interview, I was like, what are you talking about? First of all, Margie never knew Ed was coming home. She passed away over a year beforehand, and I remember making the episode and how sad it was that she didn't get to hear that her son was coming home. And second of all, she did not kill herself. It wasn't a suicide. It was an accident when she was killed. But they kept trying to frame my interview in a way that maybe Margie Jackson was guilty, and that she had taken her own life because Ed was coming home and she felt guilty about that, which is a complete false narrative. None of that's true. And also all the crime scene evidence has been tested against Margie, and it's not her. She's not on it. She's nowhere on that crime scene. But so it's suspected like that was the that's what I thought when I left my interview, was that's the drama they're creating. They're going to try to make it look like it was Margie and that Ed was, you know, spent all 20 years in prison covering for his mom, which is just not true. So with that being said, I want to back us up now. And Ed, first thing, can you just describe when they gave you the polygraph, what that was like, what the setup was?
It was just like a dark room, you know, just a bunch of shadows. And they had the lights in there right in my face. They had like those halogen, the big halogen lights. They just had those lights in a circle around my head. And they looked like they had like five or six different cameras, five in front of me, two on the side of me, had me sitting in a chair. And it's like a sauna in here. And the dude asked me, was I all right? I said, I'm fine. I said, but it's hot in here. So they stops and they go, this other guy comes up and he brings me some toilet tissue to wipe my face with. I said, man, this is not going to get it here. I mean, it was just hot in there. I mean, I was sweating. I was sweating all down my back. I mean, you're going to probably see it on camera where I was wiping my face.
Yeah, and it was a 90-plus degree day. And you said they took you into like a, it was like a warehouse building with no air, they did have air conditioning, but the air conditioner was turned off.
Exactly. It was just, I don't know, like an old, like a flat, you know, it's like they have the bedrooms, kitchen, everything in one room. And man, it was just, I mean, it was a real sauna in there. It was hot in there.
Yeah. Didn't you at some point ask them to turn the air on?
Yeah, I asked them to turn the air on when we first came in. I said, man, it's hot in here. I said, they're going to turn some air on. They never turned on any air. They went and got a fan, one of those big, big floor fans, and they had it sitting close to us, but you couldn't hear anything. So they moved it way over in the corner by, they had a pickup truck pulled in there.
So the setup is they're giving him this polygraph in this room with you know, in a dark room with light shining all over his face, all these cameras. It's, you know, if it's 90 outside, no air, is probably close to 100 degrees in there. And when Ed told me that, I don't know anything about polygraphs. I'm gonna let Allison talk here in just a second about how many things were wrong with that polygraph. For me, I was thinking from the producer's standpoint when Ed said that, I told him, like, those sons of bitches. I'm like, you know why they kept it hot? Because they want the image they want on TV is you sweating, you looking nervous, you looking, you know, they wanted to create that image. But I think there's a lot more to it than that. Allison, do you want to explain how, you know, the standard operating procedures are for conducting a polygraph and how many different ways they did it wrong?
Yeah, I'd love to. So first things first, you have to look at the polygraph examiner. There is one polygraph examiner in the entire world who I trust, because the entire results of the test can be manipulated by the examiner and how they ask the questions and everything like that. So you always want someone who at least is reputable, they're certified through the American Polygraph Association. The person who did this, who was the former FBI agent, the one who they had told me was just helping with the investigation, is not certified through the APA. So what that means is that, first off, he's not going to be held to any kind of standards of care. And if he does something incredibly unethical like this, there's no really professional repercussions for him. It's not like he can get in trouble with, you know, with the APA. So first and foremost, that's the biggest problem. One of the biggest problems is that you had someone who's not certified doing this. Then there, it gets a little bit more into the specific violations of the standards of practice, the SOPs for polygraph examinations. So, the one that's the most obvious is it's SOP 1.4.1, which talks about how you have to have a comfortable environment, because sweating and increased heart rate, things like that, will induce a physiological response that the testing mechanism will interpret as deception. In other words, if you are in an uncomfortable situation, you're hot, you're too hot, you're too cold, that will trigger false indicators of deception. If you are in a room with a whole bunch of people, that'll do it too. It's only supposed to be the subject and the test giver. That's it. Those are the only two people who are allowed in the room. If you have a bunch of lights on you, that's obviously going to increase your heart rate, which will mess up the test. All of these things were very intentionally designed to render, you know, some kind of test indicating deception. Even if there's nothing there, it's still going to register as that. And then the other thing, going back to how it's only supposed to be just the test subject and the person giving the test. That's the reason why whenever you see a polygraph on TV, if it's been done ethically, it's going to be a reenactment, because you can never ethically record a polygraph examination like you would do for a documentary. Like, you can't,
right.
You cannot ethically do that by definition of the SOPs. So there's that. Let me make sure I'm not missing anything else.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
While you're thinking about it for a second, I'll just speak to even the lights. When Ed was describing to me the lights, I remember back to my experience, for anybody that watched the Forgotten West Memphis 3, all those scenes where I'm wearing the blue shirt and I'm sitting in this dark room talking, you know, those were filmed in several hour chunks. And I remember in that situation, literally losing my mind. My producer at one point, or the director, was falling on the floor laughing because he was just out of it, who was asking me the questions, because we were in that dark room. So it's like a weird sensory thing. Everything's black. And then you got those big giant lights right in front of you shining in your face. And it's literally, you remember the old detective movies when they'd sit there and shine the light in the person? It's because it drives you insane when they're doing that. So like I experienced, so as soon as Ed was talking about this, like, I remember like how that was just driving me mad, like was making me sick to my stomach. Every day that we had to go do that, I was just would get anxiety attacks getting ready to go into it. And that was the environment that they put him in.
Yeah, that's right. That's and that's something that I've experienced, you know, over the years multiple times too, is they'll make the entire room dark and they'll say, okay, now we're going, because that completely eliminates any kind of outside lighting conditions and they can be in complete control of the lighting conditions.
Right.
So they'll make the entire room dark. Anytime you've ever seen anything for you know, your listeners out there, when you see something like on 2020 or Dateline or any of those shows, that person is sitting in a completely dark room with just a ton of lights all around them. And it is incredibly disorienting. You can't see anybody. All you see are lights. It's just, it's very unpleasant.
Yeah. It's unpleasant in general for an interview. For a polygraph, it's just completely unethical and should never be done.
Completely unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. Per the SOPs, it has to be in a comfortable environment. And that it could never be a comfortable environment for anyone.
Especially with a lot of people in the room. I mean, you had the lights and everything, but the whole crew was just like right in front of us, sitting over there. They're sitting in there too with fans on them, just sitting there.
So they were in the room with you too, the crew? I didn't know if they were in the room with when they were doing
it. Oh, it was like five or six people in there.
Yeah. So none of that. So there's all the issues with the polygraph in general, besides the fact that they lied to the attorney. Are there, I think it's kind of an area. Because one issue that you'd raise too is that, you know, they conducted a polygraph on your client that you're representing without your permission. I feel like that's probably a little bit of a fuzzy area because, you know, they're not law enforcement, but it's certainly, I think, unethical.
It's hugely unethical. I mean, to be doing anything like that with an open investigation on a client, and you know what? They knew that it was wrong because that's why they didn't tell me.
Right.
If they thought everything was above board, then they would have led with that from the get-go.
Yeah.
But they never told me about that.
Yeah.
It's hugely unethical. And also, just a crummy thing to do.
Like right.
Those are bad people.
Yeah. And they're not, and keep in mind, this is, you know, we've talked about other content creators that have done this to people, but this, you know, things like this, but, you know, it's like, they went into this to make a cool show and make money and not consider the fact that Ed is a real human with a real person, with a real family, and how this could really affect them. And I'll touch on, too, because this is something as someone who's done this, who's produced shows like this. One question you might be asking yourself was, why did Ed agree to it? Well, there's a couple reasons. I'm going to let Ed explain. But, you know, when you're innocent, you don't really worry about a polygraph. But also, I will tell you, as a documentary filmmaker myself, one thing that is a huge no-no and completely violates all journalistic integrity is paying someone for their interviews. You do not do that. It's not done. There are some unethical documentary producers that find ways to get around that loophole, and that's exactly what happened with Ed. This is what I've heard from other people, particularly some people with the West Memphis 3 case that I worked on who were part of other documentaries. So they'll do something like, can you give us a couple of pictures of you from back in the day? And then we'll give you a materials fee. We'll pay you $2,000 to have two little pictures that, you know, and they're just doing it so they can find a way to pay you. Or we're going to film an interview at your house and we'll pay you thousands of dollars as a location fee. And Ed, that's essentially what they did with you, wasn't it?
Yep. They told me they was going to give me $5,000 for the location fee, and they wanted a couple of pictures for their archives.
Yep. And they paid you for that. So, and that's what they did. That's how these companies work. This, you know, and keep in mind, this wasn't the way this works. This is not A&E that does it. So A&E funds is the network funding it, but the production company is York and Wilder is the company that they're the ones that are making all these decisions and making all these moves to make that happen. But, you know, they take and they find, and I'm sure if they got seven different people to do it, they probably use the same tactic. They find somebody like, hey, well, you know how I can get them to do it. Let's offer them, you know, $5,000. That's a significant chunk of change to get somebody to sit down and do an interview, especially when I lie to them and tell them that I'm going to help them, that the whole reason I'm doing this is to help them. So it's just another thing as far as the ethics go. So again, I can't speak to the other ones, but I can speak to Ed's episode that, you know, the reason they, the way they got Ed to do it is they bribed him with a $5,000 location fee, which is insane, completely unethical. And then they created this whole thing, set it up. And then, you know what, let's go ahead. There's no reason not to, and talk about what happened in that final interview, Ed, when Alice and I started reaching out to you guys and got you out of there.
Well, we was in there at the final interview, sitting at a table when they came in. Everybody just, you know, hovering around. It's like a crowd around me, you know. And this, I don't know the other guy. I think his name was Tony, the one that was doing all the talking. I think he was the guy, the interviewer for the show. And he was asking the questions with the FBI guy there. And the FBI guy was reading the results, and he was telling me, well, on this question, it showed that you was telling the truth. On this question, it showed that you were telling the truth. On this question, it showed that you were not quite telling the truth, that you know something. And then the other guy would pop in, Tony, well, Ed, you want to tell us right now what's going on, what happened? I mean, you can tell us, you know, all of this things like that. I mean, I don't know, we were sitting there, and he asked Kim, well, Kim, how does this grab you now? How do you feel about Ed, that he's not telling the truth and all this stuff, you know? And by, I guess after that, Allison had called Kim, and we had got out of there and left, because it wasn't going like they said it was going to go, you know?
Right.
I mean, it wasn't supposed to even go like that. They were supposed to talk, because Allison told me to ask her, how were they going to try to paint me, you know?
Yeah.
And they said they're going to paint me just like the person I was, you know what I mean? Just getting out of prison, been locked up for 20 years, you know, and not guilty. And I asked them that, are y'all going to try to paint me guilty or what? And they said, no, we're not going to do that. And I know we were texting back and forth. I was texting back and forth with her, because I wasn't texting at first, because I don't like texting really too much. I do it, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
She said, we're not going to do that. We're not trying to make, we're not going to make you look bad and this and that and this and that. And that lady, Holly, you know, I never even heard from her again. Never heard anything else from her.
Yeah, I stopped hearing from her too afterwards. Well, I'm curious, based on my interview, because you and I never really talked about this. Were they going on that path with you too? Were they asking about your mom?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They asked me about Margie, and at first I was like, what? Who? Margie. Margie's your mother, right? I'm like, yeah, my mother's name was Margie. Well, what do you think, how do you think your mother felt about this lady and that and that? And I think I called you and I talked to you, told you or something, and when we were talking, I said, man, I'll stop that immediately, because they was trying to insinuate that's exactly what it was, that my mom did this and I was covering up for her, and they was trying to insinuate that she killed herself, but I stopped all of that. I stopped all of that when they started it.
So, yeah, I remember you mentioning something, because I remember you called me really more upset than, and I've known you since you were in prison. We used to talk, you know, multiple times a week. I've never heard you sound as upset as you did that day when you called me. And I remember you saying something about your mom, but we didn't get into the whole thing. But what just shocked me is what you just said. They were still talking to you as though she had taken her own life on purpose?
Yeah, I mean, just like, you think that's probably what happened with your mom? Man, my mom didn't even, like you said, my mom didn't even know I was coming home.
The part that pisses me off even more about that is, in my Uber, when I left, which was hours before you got there, to verify, I went and looked up Margie's date of death, and how she died, and when you found out you were getting released, and I sent all that information to that Michael hours before. So they knew without question before you got there that none of that was true, and
they were just trying to create something.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know that we need to go much further with this. I think that. It's important to me, because I remember that day that you called me and you were as upset as you were. I was ready to fly back down to Texas and go start beating down doors. And, you know, I restrained putting any of this information out there with the, under the thought that they weren't going to air the show. They clearly are. They specifically named in the social media or the on their website that your case is going to be one of the ones that's featured. But I think it's the best we can do is to be fair and let people know, like, that's how this show was created. This is the angle that they were trying to go with it. And again, I say that because I would, first of all, I'd recommend nobody watch any of it. I wouldn't give them a single view on this show, not to give them the satisfaction. But I know that a lot of you out of curiosity will. I would be looking at not just Ed's case, but all of the cases through the lens that this is how these people operate. This is how this production company works. This is how they created this thing. The whole thing is manipulated. You have six other people who have attorneys that they work with that all did these polygraphs. And I just find it real hard to believe that any of those attorneys agreed to it. Cause I said this when I had, cause after you left, Allison, I sat, and after I did my interview, I sat and talked to a couple of the producers about that specific thing. And I just said, I said, you guys didn't tell Allison. Why? And, oh no, we meant to tell her. I'm like, no. He told me that this was a decision made not to tell her. And I'm like, what did you guys do with the other ones? Or like, it's shockingly, I think what he said to me was shockingly, all the attorneys have been very supportive of this. And I just don't believe it.
Malarkey. I don't believe that either. I mean, this is, in Ed's case, you know, you want to do anything you can for your client. And, you know, but it's going to have to be something that would actually help them. And polygraphs are so unreliable and so easily manipulated that that's never going to be significant help to serious professionals like attorneys and like defense attorneys and the prosecutors. So you would never do that. That's not going to advance your case in a meaningful way. I can't imagine an attorney ever agreeing to that.
Yeah, me neither. So we'll see. We'll see how much other, you know, unfortunately, you know, for the other clients, they don't have awesome attorneys and a podcaster that's going along the journey with them that can air out what's happening. So we'll see. I suspect there will be some fallout from this, you know, after once it starts airing. So just so you guys know, that's it. We're going to wrap this thing up, but it's going to be airing soon. And I wanted to also get it out to you guys before, because I'm sure this is coming up in the next few weeks. Pretty soon, A&E is going to start making social media posts about it. So it's going to be the word's going to be getting out. So at least all of you know what this show is all about before those social media posts start happening and before the show airs. And with that, the last thing though, Ed, why we got you here, aside from this, how's life going for you?
I mean, everything's going pretty good, man. Just working every day, go to work in the morning, get off, come home, you know, take care of stuff around the house. And just, man, I rush to get home and play with my grandson every day.
Yeah. And what's his actual name?
Crew, not Bob.
Crew. Crew. He goes by Crew. Bob, though.
Crew, Bob, Crew.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. And when I got to go to the house and see him, it was, you know, Crew let me hold him for about 4 seconds before he wanted his pop, pop. He started reaching back for Ed, and that baby was in Ed's arms the entire time. So I'm super happy you get to have that time with your grandson and be home. It's always good to see you, Ed, and Allison, of course, it's always 2 weeks, you know, 2 weeks in a row I get to see you.
What a treat.
I know.
Been the highlight of my summer so far.
All right, guys. Well, we'll let you guys know. And for all you guys, we'll talk about this more. I get your questions all ready for this week's Friday follow-up. We'll be recording that on Wednesday. With that being said, we'll talk to you guys next week. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.